Today is March 10th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. This week, we're talking about Adobe's Creative Suite 3. It's slated to be announced at the end of the month and will likely ship before the end of April. So this week's question for the Context Machine, why is everyone so geared up about it?
Adobe is planning a special New York City launch event for its Creative Suite 3 package on March 27th. The event is scheduled for 3:30 p.m. East Coast time, and the company is calling it the largest software release in Adobe's 25-year history. The launch event will be webcast live and will detail new product features as well as Creative Suite configurations. As part of the build-up to the announcements, Adobe has released a teaser video on YouTube. The video is part of Adobe's What's in the Box campaign, but it doesn't reveal any product information. For those not familiar with the Creative Suite, version 3 will include Photoshop, Illustrator, and InDesign, and it's expected to replace Adobe Go Live with Dreamweaver, previously of Macromedia.
Now, in the wake of this news, several analyst comments bubbled to the surface. For example, Prudential Equity Group analyst Jesse Tortura is predicting that Apple will also use the end of March to release the next version of Mac OS X, version 10.5, called Leopard. He expects the simultaneous release of both products to act as a catalyst to boost Mac sales.
Or maybe Apple will let those folks salivating over CS3 buy all their Mac Pros with 10.4 installed. That's Mac OS X, 10.4 pre-installed, so that they can sell them Leopard for $130 a couple months later. What, is that too cynical of me?
Many creative pros have been holding out for Intel native versions of Adobe's design products before replacing their aging G4s and G5 Macs. Adobe Creative Suite 3 offers the Intel support users have been waiting for, and combined with Intel-based Macs preloaded with Leopard, makes a very compelling upgrade option for PowerPC Mac holdouts.
Meanwhile, Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster agrees that Apple will see a sales boost from the CS3 release. He doesn't jump on Mr. Tortuga's early Leopard release bandwagon, though. Mr. Munster speculated that about 15% of pro-level Mac and Adobe product users are likely to purchase a Mac Pro or MacBook Pro after the CS3 release. If that's correct, that would add an additional 450,000 units for the June quarter, resulting in about a 13% upside. He also notes that Apple's pro-level computers carry a higher margin than the rest of the Mac product line, which should help boost Apple's gross margins in the upcoming quarters.
And one other story from the week, which we'll touch on briefly. California has introduced a bill that would make the Open Document Format, or ODF, a mandatory requirement for its state agencies when procuring software. This is putting heat on Microsoft, which is promoting its own OOXML standard, according to a report in IT Wire on Monday. The Open Document Format is recognized as an ISO standard and can be implemented by any vendor. However, Microsoft has been promoting its own variation, and that has generated some debate in the industry. Minnesota and Texas have also proposed an Open XML standard for their government documents.
ODF, that's Open Document Format again, is supported by an alliance of firms arguing that as government documents move from paper to electronic formats, they must be in a form that is universally readable and will migrate well as we go forward. Now, if you've used a computer for more than a few years, you already know that opening documents created by previous versions of some piece of software is a continual problem. Open document formats are intended to alleviate this problem by creating a standard so that new software versions can more easily be made backwards compatible. Incidentally, I also realized right before we head into the context machine that I called him Mr. Tortuga. That would be where that would be a pirate, I suppose. It's Mr. Tortora, Jesse Tortora of Prudential. Mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of funny when I realized that that's what I'd said. But let's get into the kind of context machine. Let's talk a little bit about Creative Suite 3, CS3 on the Mac. Now, when you read the articles that we carry this week, you read the analyst commentary, it looks like the future of the world hinges on this product release. So let's back up for a second and deal with this question. Who uses CS3?
Okay. First, let me say I'm excited about this whole topic because we're now jumping back into my area of expertise. I come from the whole graphic design end of the Mac community. All right. Now, who's actually using the Adobe Creative Suite products? And the answer is actually kind of surprising. It's not just creative professionals, graphic designers, people that need to create the books, flyers, business cards, all the other things that we use every day. It's also regular, everyday people that want to create like their own family newsletter or do some image editing for their photographs. So the whole Creative Suite line has gone beyond just professionals, and now you have the kind of that pro-am group that's in there as well, and even some flat-out amateur users that are doing some fantastic things with these products.
Now, Photoshop, I think people generally know what Photoshop is, particularly because it's ended up in the popular language. You know, oh, just take that picture and Photoshop it, or that looks Photoshopped. As a verb for altered. So I think right. People generally know that Photoshop is an image editing, image manipulation tool. Give a brief description for anyone that might not be familiar with them of Illustrator. Let's just go through these one by one. The 30-second description of Illustrator.
Okay. The 30-second description of Illustrator starts with what Photoshop is. And Photoshop is a pixel-by-pixel image manipulation application. So it works with the rastered type images. Illustrator is a stroke and fill kind of application. So instead of doing the pixel by pixel thing, you're creating the broader shapes, and they can be scaled up or down to any resolution without losing image quality, which is a big difference from what Photoshop does. So think of Photoshop as an image editor and Illustrator as a graphic creation tool. Then you move on to InDesign, which is a page layout application. And for people that have been around a really long time, there's other applications that fit in with that, which would be PageMaker. That's the granddaddy of all of them. And then later on, that was trumped by Quark Express. And now we have Adobe InDesign to compete with Quark Express. This is the application that takes the graphics that you're creating in Illustrator and Photoshop, brings them together into a common document that adds in the text and other components that will make up your finished piece.
So InDesign is the thing, or Quark Express is the thing that you use if, for example, you've generated all this content and now you want to lay out a magazine, or you want to lay out a newspaper, or you want to create a newsletter.
Exactly.
And presumably also something that you could use to create advertisements or to create, so any kind of media production on printed media.
Yes, and when you drive down the street, go into a bookstore, go to a restaurant, someone hands you a business card, all of these things are being made primarily in two applications, and that's either Adobe InDesign or Quark Express. Those are the applications that actually make the printed world happen.
It's probably also worth pointing out, just for the sake of conversation here for folks that are familiar with Apple products and not so familiar with the Creative Suite products, that if you're familiar with Apple's Pages application, Pages is essentially a layout application, right? It lets you type in text,
yes.
But it really is designed to make layout easy.
Yes, and I know that there's some people out there that bag on Pages, but honestly, I think Pages is a really, really nice program. And it lets the average user create professional-looking products without having to go through the learning curve that goes along with the products from Adobe and Quark.
All right. So we've talked a little bit about who uses Creative Suite 3. We've talked a little bit about what their industries are. Now, when you hear stuff like the articles that we're carrying this week about the release of CS3, you get the sense very quickly that CS3 acts as a bellwether for the pro situation on the Mac. I mean, everyone said the moment the Mac Pro came out, they said, well, yeah, but no one's going to buy it because Photoshop isn't out for it. Talk a little bit about why it is that CS3 is such an important application or set of applications and why it is that you can use it as essentially a guidepost for the situation of pro usage on the Mac.
Well, pro users, they need to have the utmost power coming out of their machine all the time. And if some of that horsepower has to be redirected to emulating a different operating environment, like Rosetta does on the Intel Macs, or back when we went through our last major transition, when we had to use Classic for a while instead of OS X for certain applications, you end up with a really big performance hit. And honestly, I have not upgraded to a Intel Mac yet because I've been waiting for the universal binary versions of the Creative Suite to come out. When I did my tests of Photoshop CS2 on a top-of-the-line MacBook Pro, I thought, you know, I'd rather put a pencil in my eye. This just isn't going to cut it for me. And time is money in the graphic industry.
All right, let's talk a little bit about logistics here, or numbers, rather. Gene Munster puts out these numbers that say, for example, we think that Apple might sell nearly 500,000 additional units for MacBooks, MacBook Pros, and Mac Pros. Now, that's 500,000 machines, 450,000, he says. 500,000 machines. Does that mean that CS3 is expected to sell 500,000 copies when it comes out? I mean, that seems like a very large number. What are some of the number considerations here? Do we assume that these pro users, if people have, for example, advertising houses that are switching over to Intel-based Macs, that they'll switch several machines for a single purchase of CS3? I mean, what are some of the numbers about the number of people using CS3, the number of Macs expected to be sold, the size of this industry?
Well, when you look at the numbers that Gene Munster threw out, they kind of make sense to me, because right now we have an entire market full of people that are, in essence, have been waiting for Adobe's permission to go out and buy an Intel Mac. And that's what's going to happen when Adobe finally ships CS3. So with that in mind, remember that there are big and small ad agencies all over the country, and all over the world for that matter, that have been holding off on making this upgrade because they need to have the performance and the performance boost that they're going to get by running CS3 on an Intel-based Mac is going to be phenomenal. Just playing with Photoshop CS3 beta, the difference even on a G4 PowerBook is amazing. And when you put it on an Intel Mac, it's like they kicked in the afterburners for the program. These are the kinds of things that the graphic design and printing and publishing industry want. What I think you're going to see first is that we'll have large numbers of bigger companies doing this transition. And then once they've completed that, then the smaller and mid-size companies that can afford to do it, they'll be jumping on the bandwagon. Then you'll have the individual designers that for whatever reason haven't upgraded. Either they want to see what goes wrong for everyone else, or they want to save up their money. Then those people will start doing the transition as well. So I think what we're going to look at out of the whole thing is this kind of wave of change in the graphic industry as all these companies start doing this big move. So the numbers that Mr. Munster has been talking about, I like saying that, Mr. Munster. Anyhow, the numbers that he's been talking about, I think, sound totally reasonable, because you're looking at not just this massive purchase where everyone goes out on the same day and says, give me CS3. Oh, and by the way, throw in a MacBook Pro with it. You're looking at this phase-in thing over the next several months.
All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about the product itself. CS3 is not currently on the market. As
right.
we're pointing out, it will be announced at the end of the month. But let's talk a little bit about some of the changes. Obviously, there's the universal binary element of this that we've talked about. But you've been working with the beta of CS3, and you're very familiar with these applications. So let's begin with the general question, and then we can talk about any specifics that you think are interesting. But what are some reactions to the program itself? I mean, functionally, operationally, aside from speed issues, how are these programs? Are they the same as they were before, or are there feature changes? Are there things that people should know about aside from the fact that it's going to be universal binary?
Well, it'll be easier to reference these things with Photoshop CS3, since there's a public beta. So there's things that people can actually go look at and compare to what I'm saying. So with that in mind, what I'm seeing is that the Adobe has gone through and tried to optimize the menus some more. So consolidating features in a way that makes sense to the people that are using the products. And I think we're going to see even more of that when Adobe actually lays out a bunch of these features for us on the 27th, especially because they're also going to be talking about the new product they just announced this week, which is Photoshop CS3 Extended, which has a superset of features for specific industries. And that's the kind of mentality Adobe is using with this new upgrade. The whole thing about optimizing things for the people that are actually using it, which is a pleasant change because historically people have learned how to use an Adobe product, then a new version comes out, and it seems that without rhyme or reason, features have changed, menus have changed, keyboard shortcuts have changed, and now we have more of a unified interface that's going to be much easier for people to figure out. That's going to be a big thing right there.
All right, and that's a usability issue, and usability, of course, correlates to time, and as you've pointed out, time correlates to money. Talk a little bit about some specific features if you've been using some of these betas. What is the pick a small thing that you're really excited about? What is one really cool feature that's on its way?
Actually, one of the coolest features I've seen is it's in Photoshop CS3, and it's the whole thing with being able to do all the filters and everything else non-destructive. That is a huge thing because we've always had to make copies of layers or copies of files to make sure that if we need to step back to a prior state because of a destructive filter that we've applied to a layer or image, you know, we don't have to do that anymore. That's going to be a huge, huge time saver for a lot of people, and it's going to make it a lot easier for the creative pros that are using these applications to go in and experiment and come up with really cool, exciting ideas without having to worry about, am I going to lose 2 days worth of work when I play with this one feature?
And that is just for anyone that's not familiar with the term non-destructive edits. If you're familiar with iPhoto, for example, you can apply changes to something, you know, change the saturation or the exposure or straighten a photo or crop it. And that is non-destructive. You can always hit revert to the original. I assume that in Photoshop, it's not just that you can revert to the original, you can revert to the previous step.
Right, right. And thank you, Ricky, for translating from my Creative Pro talk to regular human speak.
Yeah. Well, it's also true in the stuff that I use. I tend to work with audio applications, and of course, GarageBand, if you're familiar with that, edits audio non-destructively. If you clip an audio file or move it around in the song, the original audio file that you recorded stays unchanged. So, So that's actually very surprising. It's surprising to me. I don't use Photoshop enough to know that they didn't have non-destructive editing before.
Well, they had bits of it, but now it's like they had previously implemented it, like, hey, this would be a good idea. We'll just throw a little bit of it out. But this time they went, oh, yeah, it really is a good idea. Let's go full on with it, which is what they should have done in the beginning. So hooray for Adobe for finally bringing that out for us so we can really do it.
And, of course, non-destructive editing is only really useful if it's true with everything. Because if you do that one thing that was destructive and you destroy your project, you're like, wait, there's...
That wasn't very non-destructive. Now, was
right.
it? Yeah.
And it kind of catches people by surprise. All right. Anything else about CS3 that you want to let people know about or want to talk about?
Well, one thing I'm really excited about is to see exactly what happens when people get their hands on InDesign CS3. We had a phase in the graphic arts and design industry where the whole page layout end of things really stagnated. After PageMaker had been supplanted by Quark Express, there came a point when Quark became complacent and they didn't give us the same quality product that they had been offering before. And that became a really big problem because everyone had to use Quark Express and everyone hated Quark. Well, that changed when Adobe released InDesign. And now there was a viable option. Okay, when InDesign 2 came out, and then especially InDesign CS, there was really a viable option and alternative to Quark Express. So then Quark had to kick it up a notch, and they really did when they released Express 7, their current version of Quark Express, which was Universal Binary before Adobe's products were. So, you know, go figure. But what that did was that created this fire in the marketplace where we now have two really good, really viable alternatives in the page layout space with Quark Express 7 and InDesign CS2, and then, of course, InDesign CS3. So Express 7 leapfrogged over InDesign CS2 with a lot of its features. Now we're going to see this again, I'm sure, when InDesign CS3 comes out. It will do the feature parity for Quark Express and then leapfrog again over what they're doing. So now we're going to have this really good competitive marketplace for graphic designers shopping around for their page layout applications, and it's going to be healthy for the industry, and we're going to have much better products all the way around. So I'm very excited to see both of these companies going head-to-head for the next several years while they fight to make the best product, because ultimately it doesn't matter which one is the best, we're going to win.
Amen. Competition is a good thing, always seems to be the way.
Indeed.
And that's going to have to be the final word. We'll keep an eye, of course, on CS3. Jeff, of course, will be talking about it. I assume that there will be some stuff that you write in our post as Mac Observer review editor that we'll see some commentary on this stuff when it comes out. And
absolutely.
Look forward to seeing the coverage and hearing about how this all works out. If you have thoughts about CS3, if you have thoughts about Mac Pros, if you have thoughts about sales, about analyst commentary, there's a lot of stuff bunched up in this subject. Go ahead and send us any comments you might have, roundup@macobserver.com. And of course, we'll wrap up with the usual product roundup.
Okay, then I'll start. The Sound Guy Incorporated announced the immediate availability of the audio plug-in Backwards Machine on Thursday. Backwards Machine is available as a VST or audio units plug-in and can reverse incoming audio sources in real time. It also can crossfade between forward and backward versions of audio files, and it can also do multiple repeats of reversed loops, and Backwards Machine is priced at $35.
I have no idea how that works. I gotta go figure that out. Someone in the comments on that article wrote, how can you play something backwards in real time when by definition backwards means you play the last thing first?
I know. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that works. And my guess is that it involves a flux capacitor and a Mr. Fusion.
Right, and I'm pretty sure that Emilio Estevez is involved. Enigma Games announced the immediate availability of the Jigsaw-style puzzle game Solved on Monday. The game includes 40 puzzles, leisure and timed play modes, and background music. Additional puzzles are available through a monthly online subscription. Solved is priced at $20 US.
And Outer Level announced the immediate availability of the software license management application License Keeper on Tuesday. This application stores product serial numbers, license files, electronic receipts, the associated emails that go along with all of that, and any other files that you need to keep track of with that licensing, which sounds interesting to me. I'm looking forward to playing with that product. It's $20.
And in his Just a Peek column, Vern Seward reviewed the Belkin TuneTalk Stereo and the desktop sharing service Glance. And iPod Observer's new review editor, Bob Levitis, looked at the Sonic Boom iPod backpack and boombox, whatchamajigger fusion thing, and Extreme Max Tango speaker system. You reviewed that as well.
Okay, Ricky, I have a quick question for you. Did you mean Emilio Estevez or Michael J. Fox?
Funny you should ask. I confuse the two for reasons I've never really understood. But I guess Emilio Estevez is the Breakfast Club, and I wanted to say DuckTales, but the ice hockey one, and I guess Michael J. Fox is the Back to the Future one.
That would be right.
Although it is funny to imagine that Emilio Estevez would be involved in time travel.
No, it's actually kind of scary. All right, well, that's the news, and thanks for listening to Apple Weekly Report.
Our content is written by the fine staff of the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. PME is coming up, the Podcast and Portable Media Expo. It's coming up in September, so a while from now. But early bird registration is up. And Dig, the weekly roundup. You can head to dig.com or head to the show notes, macobserver.com/roundup. Take a look at the link to Dig the show. Thank you to those of you who have already done that. And that's all I've got.
And thanks for putting up with us for another week. And stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone, we will see you online.